two but three composers of the week. Ballet masters from 19th century France, Ferdinand Hérold, Adolphe Adam and Léo Delibes. Donald begins his survey of their music, their ballet scores in particular, tomorrow at 12 midday with another chance to hear the programme at 6:30 in the evening. And that's here on BBC Radio 3, 90 to 93 FM on digital radio and online. It's now just after 11:30, time for Jazz Lineup with Julian Joseph.
Hello, this week I'm delighted to be joined by Jackie Dagworth to talk to her about her new album, It Happens Quietly. Welcome, Jackie.
Hello.
It's great to see you. Are you still on tour?
Well, we've just finished quite an extensive group of gigs. I've got a little rest now in October. I'm doing a bit of filming, actually. But then in November, I've got a couple of really nice gigs in the London Jazz Festival and Manchester Royal Northern College of Music.
Fantastic. Well, thanks, Jackie. We'll talk properly in a little bit. And first, music from classic baritone saxophone giant Serge Chaloff. Now, the Proper Note label have released a 4-CD collection called Boss Baritone, featuring music spanning his time with Woody Herman, Red Rodney, Miles Davis, and his own various bands from 1946 to 1957, the year of his death. Here he is with altoist Boots Musuli. Russ Freeman's on piano, Jimmy Woody's on the bass, and Buzzy Druten is on drums. The year is 1954. The place is Boston, with a sound more typical of the West Coast in the 1950s. This is Oh Baby. The baritone of Serge Chaloff and Oh Baby, with Boots Masuli on alto, Russ Freeman was on piano, Jimmy Woody on the bass, and Buzzy Drutin was on drums. That was taken from CD 2 of a 4-CD box set on Proper Note called Boss Baritone. The box set offers a comprehensive overview of one of the great baritone sax characters. There's music from a variety of great bands, but it is his work as a leader that stands out. His orchestra of 54 highly distinguishes itself and convincingly inhabits its own territory. This is Jazz Lineup on BBC Radio 3 with me, Julian Joseph. It gives me great pleasure to welcome back one of the country's premier jazz voices and a woman who's been waiting patiently since my brief introduction at the top of the show. Welcome, Jackie Dankworth.
Oh, it's lovely. It's nice to hear you.
Said you were doing some filming nearby.
Yeah, well, I landed this little part in a few episodes of The Borgias, starring Jeremy Irons.
On Sky,
On Sky. Have you been following it at all?
Well, I haven't, but I've seen all of the...
The trailers
for it. It's big. It's a big television
event.
It's
very successful in America, and it's just come over here. And I'm playing the part of Rosa, the brothel keeper.
Okay.
So, but she's a real character. This, you know, it's a nice part. It's a nice little cameo part, and they're the most interesting women to play. These sort of, independent business women.
We're going to talk about your new album, It Happens Quietly, and each of the songs on the record are quite poignant. I mean, the whole scenario of the record is a poignant one in terms of your connection with your own father, musically and as his daughter. But combining those two attributes, the two great things in your life, I guess, be it music and drama.
Yeah.
And I guess as a singer, you have to bring drama to the music anyway.
Well, I think you do, because the one thing that singers, I always think of voices as instruments anyway, but the one difference that singers have are the words, it's as simple as that. And you're telling stories, and I guess I've always been interested in that, in telling the story of a song. But I remember seeing Frank Sinatra at the Albert Hall because my mum was his support act.
Wow.
I'm not sure she'd like me. She'd like that.
You mean she was sharing the bill?
Sharing the bill with. Sorry, Mum.
I'm sure Frank won't mind.
Well, he's up there with Dad now. They're probably having a giggle. But
that's true.
And I do remember what a great actor he was as a singer. You know, everybody in the audience thought that he was singing to them. Mm. It was pretty powerful, actually. And that was when his voice was going. Right. And so it is an amazing thing. And my mum has that as well. You know, she's got that very dramatic side to her. So I guess it is a powerful thing.
I'm just going to read a quote about your record, and it says, an album that will not only hold considerable appeal to established jazz listeners, but may also bring the voice of Jackie Dankworth to a wider constituency.
That's nice. I don't know. I've had a strange amount of people saying, wow, you know, it's Streisand-esque, or, you know, it's sort of gone beyond the jazz thing. I mean, I just embrace anything positive like that. I just embrace it, and it's up to other people to make a decision. It wasn't a conscious decision to do that. I just decided to make an album, you know. Let's do some songs. And that's how we did it.
Let's look at the premise of the record. I know that it was born out of you and your father wanting to collaborate together musically. Yeah. Tell us about how that was manifesting itself.
Well, we've been talking about it for years and years, and I think just being a stubborn daughter, I kept trying, you know, I've always wanted to carve my own path and be independent from this family, you know, and my dad kept saying, you know, we should make an album, and I'd be resisting, and then I think when he got, you know, 2 years before he died, his health was failing, and I thought, oh my goodness, you know, this isn't good. Mm. And we talked about it, and we started the album. We recorded in Mum and Dad's sitting room. Mm-hmm. I sang in the conservatory, and everything was done live, just in the front room. Well, you've been to the front room there, and there's this lovely piano, and I sang in the conservatory, and then they were going on tour, so we knew we had to put it on hold. We did all the rhythm section parts. Mm-hmm. My brother Alec was on bass, Malcolm Edmondson on piano, Andrew Bain on drums, and that was it at that time. It was just a trio. And then my mum broke her leg, so they had to cancel their American tour, and Dad looked after my mum for about the best part of a year, so everything got put on hold. Mm-hmm. And then they went on tour and then came back, and my dad's health just took a nosedive. Mm. So it was, you know, really panic stations to try and get it done. And so literally we finished it around his bed, you know. And Ken Gibson came, very long-standing family friend, and Dad would sing lines and, you know, make notes. And so it was, you know, it was touch and go. Without Ken, who was Ken Gibson was my dad's amanuensis, his right-hand man. It's a nice word.
It's a brilliant word.
And without Ken, we never really would have finished the album. And Tony Platt was very tenacious in driving it forward as well, because, of course, we were all, I mean, I was grieving, you know, after my dad died. But we had to get it done. And, I mean, that was quite emotional, because all the tracks, of course, had my dad's voice over, you know, the tracks, the rhythm section tracks.
Right.
Had my dad's voice, come on, Jackie, you know, are you ready? And counting the band in and so on. So I got back home every night after putting vocals down. We kept some of the live vocals, and some we re-recorded in a little studio in Northampton. You know, I'd get back, and definitely a few glasses of wine were had around the kitchen table.
Must have been cathartic also, just in that period where his health was failing, and yet you were working on something positive and that was growing and new.
Yeah, it was very comforting, actually. And funnily enough, I just wrote a blog last night. Someone's asked me to write a blog, and I talked about this and how healing it was, and how many people don't have that kind of those memories and that musical connection, which kind of goes on forever. And I think, you know, when we scattered his ashes and so on, there's no actual gravestone for my dad. It's not even a plaque or anything. And I thought, isn't that odd? There is no, and it's almost as though his music is
monument.
I think so. I think for some reason we decided not to do that, because it's more about going to listen to his music if you want to be close to him, or, you know. I'm sort of revisiting all his music again, which is nice.
Wow. Yeah. Well, let's visit the music on this CD, It Happens Quietly. The Man, tell us about that piece.
Well, that's a piece he wrote inspired by Stan Tracy, because he's called Stan the Man Tracy in the business.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, and that's what my dad used to call him anyway, the man. I wrote some lyrics to it at 4 a.m. after a breakup of a relationship. You know, that old chestnut. And retitled it, It's Time to Start Over Again. Mm-hmm. But dad quite liked the lyrics. And we did it for a library music project 5 years before. Mm-hmm. And we did a few little songs together that I wrote lyrics for and he wrote the music. And I rang up Andrew Sonnox, who's the producer of the library music product, project, and he said, "You're welcome to the files of Dad's solo on that." So, because I woke up one morning after Dad died, and I thought, "I wonder if it'll fit," because we didn't use any click tracks or computers, and they took the solo from 5 years before and put it on the track we did recently, and you know, in his front room, and luckily his saxophone solo fitted.
Wow.
Works really well. So he was a canny old soul, wasn't he? He was planning it even after he'd disappeared this earth. He thought, I don't know. It was something strange about the way it all fitted, because I think you can manipulate to a certain point, but if it's really out, you couldn't do it. So, I mean, I think we had to move a couple of notes, and that was it, to fit the chord changes. So.
Well, let's have a listen to that.
One, two, three. Some clover again. I'll have to start yoga rosin. I'm going to smile when I wake up, get out of my lazy bed. I finally figured it out. Now I know what it's about. I'll open the shutters and shout and tell the town to settle down, 'cause he's out of my crazy head. He's gone away, the man has gone, and I'm alone, but I've moved on, he's gone. So dump the man quickly as you can, leave the fine bed. It's time to start over anew, no more of that muddling through. I'll have to bid heartache adieu, I'm going to smile when I wake up, get out. Until the town settled down, 'cause he's out of my crazy head. He's gone away, the man is gone, and I'm alone, but I've moved on, he's gone. So dump the man quickly as you can, leave that frying pan, it's time to start over anew. No more of that muddling through, I'll have to bid heartache adieu.
The swinging sound of Jackie Dankworth and The Man from her new album It Happens Quietly, and featuring there on alto saxophone Sir John Dankworth. And I'm talking with Jackie Dankworth. Jackie, your father counts the tunes off, so that's another little bonus that you have on these tracks.
Yeah, well, just that it's just the first track. We sort of did a bookend, Nightingale Sang in Berkeley mm-hmm. Square, and mm-hmm. then right at the end, the man is right at the end and he counts that off. So we sort of did it as a little, you know, bookend thing. But when I was, as I said before, when I was recording the tracks, his voice was all over the beginning and the end. And so that was weird. But we decided, I think we thought that would be a bit too much to put it on all the tracks on the album. So it's just a little snippet of, well, just also to let people know he was actually there, you know, because you don't, you know, I guess he was very much involved in it. And did all the, you know, the mad arrangements, some on the morning of the actual recording, but we won't say anything about that. 10 minutes before going into the studio, he'd be finishing it off. Yeah.
He could work very quickly. Mm. How did you decide on the repertoire? I mean, you mentioned A Nightingale Sang in Berkeley Square, In the Still of the Night, It Happens Quietly. I mean, is it two original pieces?
There's only two. There's The Man and It Happens Quietly, which is a beautiful ballad that Dad wrote with Buddy Kay years ago in the 60s.
Right.
And in fact, I think my mum sang it in the 60s because I put it into iTunes and I didn't realise she'd done it. I probably would never have done it if I'd known. But my dad said, look, this tune hasn't been done since the 60s. Mm-hmm. Look, I think it's a beautiful tune. I think it would really suit you. And he literally got it off the top shelf and blew the dust off the brown envelope, you know. And the same with A Nightingale Sang in Berkeley Square. Actually, he'd been working on that arrangement over the last couple of years, you know, before we started recording, I think, with me in mind. He loved the song and the arrangement's quite sort of otherworldly. So I think it works quite beautifully. And he was very proud of that arrangement. I know that. I certainly am.
Tell us a bit about the people you've got in the band. You've got Chris Allard on guitar.
Yeah.
Malcolm Edmondson is on the piano.
Yeah.
Alec, you've already mentioned, your brother, is playing bass. How did you put the team together of people you wanted for this record?
Well, Malcolm is my musical director and a wonderful musician, and he's now professor of music at the Guildhall, jazz piano. And Andrew Bain was playing in my band at the time. Chris Allard's been with me for a long time, and Alec is my brother.
And you also enjoy his bass playing too.
Yeah, I didn't mean it like that. He's a great bass player, and so it's nice to have him around. And so that was the original team, and then Alec couldn't make a couple of sessions, so Steve Watts played, and Steve Brown played on drums on some of the tracks. And it all just seemed to come together in the end. And it's often the musicians you're working with at the time and you feel comfortable with, and they're all lovely musicians. So, and Karen Sharp is on it, and she plays beautifully on it, and some other Jimmy Hastings, Henry Lowther, all people that were very close to my dad.
Yeah.
So that was really nice for them to be on it. And I think they feel quite pleased to be on it. They said, it's really...
You've got Ben Davis playing cello on A Love Like Ours.
Yeah, and he's lovely. Do you know Ben?
I do. We went to school together.
You didn't?
Yeah.
I think he's an amazing musician and unusual character. And, he's really carving a niche for the jazz cello. I think he's pretty brave, in the way he's sort of stuck to his guns. And I just think he's great.
So your own gigs and promoting this record, is that you're doing a lot of that now, are you?
Yeah. I mean, as I said, I'm taking this time off to do this part in the Borgias.
Yeah.
And then in November, I've got a few really nice gigs in November. And Chris Allard, my guitarist, he's organised a concert in Wivenhoe, which is where he's from.
Right.
So we've, we're... we're doing a big concert in the church there, which is amazing. He's become a sort of entrepreneur and he's putting on some gigs. And, you know, after November, it's Christmas. So I'm doing the family Christmas show with my mum down at in Wavendon. And then we've got some gigs coming up in next year and they'll all be on my website. I better type them in as soon as I get home.
Are you getting a chance to sing with an orchestra, though?
I've done a few. I did a gig at the Cadogan Hall with it was actually with the BBC. They called it the Cadogan Swing Orchestra. It was the BBC big band, pretty much, and the Cadogan Strings. So that was amazing. And it's a good point. When we go to the Royal Northern College of Music, we're going to be using the students who will be playing the strings, and they're very high standard. You know, they're about to go into the business. So it's hard, you know, in these financial times to get promoters, you know, because you've got to pay at least 12 pieces. So we did a gig at Ronnie's a few weeks ago, and that was with Chris Garrick and Ben. And for the London Jazz Festival, we're going to be using Chris and Ben as the kind of string section, which is great. You
absolutely.
Know? Which is a sort of taste, but maybe next year, you know, we'll work with some orchestras and... it's the plan.
Fantastic. Well, Jackie, it's so great speaking with you.
And you too.
The album sounds beautiful.
Thank
you. It happens quietly. It's on the Specific Jazz label. And I look forward to hearing much more from it and to hearing much more from you.
Well, it was a nice chat, wasn't it?
Absolutely. Jackie Dankwood, thank you so much.
Thank you.
This is It Happens Quietly.
no special miracle will it reveal. But now we've met, and I know why. There is no thunder. It happens quietly because it's
It Happens Quietly, the title track from Jackie Dankworth's new album. That was her tender rendition of a piece written by her late father and Buddy Kay. And my thanks to Jackie for coming in to speak with us. This is Jazz Lineup on BBC Radio 3 with me, Julian Joseph. We are online, on FM and on DAB Digital Radio. There's a talented new piano player on the block. His name is Tigran Hamasyan. He was born in Armenia, but has lived the best part of his 24 years now in the United States, and he's released his first album for the Verve label called A Fable. There's no doubt Tigran has a prodigious technique, a great sense of time and conception, and will be a musician to watch in the coming years, with the Armenian roots playing a major part in formulating his style. This is what he sounds like on an original composition called What the Waves Brought. Thank you. Armenian-born piano sensation Tigran Hamasyan and what the waves brought from his new album on Verve called A Fable. He's an impressive talent with already so much of his own solo piano playing conception formulated. The album is interesting pianistically and most importantly musically. I look forward to hearing him live. BBC Jazz Award-winning pianist Andrew McCormack has teamed up with celebrated saxophonist and award-winning composer and producer Jason Yard. And I'm fortunate that we have Jason on the line right now to talk to me about this album and his collaboration with Andrew McCormack in particular. Welcome, Jason. Now, this is a strong duet album of original music. What is your particular connection?
Our connection goes back to Tomorrow's Warriors and the mid to late 90s. I kind of was involved in Tomorrow's Warriors, which was a project leading on from the Jazz Warriors, which Gary Crosby set up as an educational kind of device, kind of school without walls, as I think he liked to call it. And basically, we used to do jam sessions at the old Jazz Cafe and various places, the Rhythmic, when it was around. And I met Andrew through these sessions, and also playing in different groups that span off out of that organization. My version of Tomorrow's Warriors went on to become J-Life, and Andrew would often dep in that group for Robert Mitchell, who was the main piano player.
Both of you are really into composition, and composition on a large scale, so you think in many different colors, and also it just allows you to deal with your instruments. You're both musicians who are very much focused on understanding vocabulary, history, and tradition. So in many ways, bringing you two together has a certain kind of logic to it, especially as you both get to investigate music and its big ideas, I guess, in a very small setting.
Because we do share a very orchestral approach, and we, you know, we've both been afforded great opportunities to write for orchestras such as the LSO. And so it is really a way of channeling all those experiences from orchestral, big band, playing in quartets or, you know, bigger bands or smaller jazz combos, and just channeling all of that into a duo setting, very much with composers' ears.
Now, the track we're going to hear is called Dark to Bright. Could you set that up for us, please?
Oh, well, this is particularly interesting in that it's actually a very old composition of mine. It's probably more than 20 years old now, which is without giving my age away, but anyway. it's actually on the J-Life album that was recorded in the end of the 90s. We thought it'd be interesting to look at some of our older compositions and try and work them into this kind of stripped-down format and see what challenges that threw up. And so Dark to Bright, basically, it being a tune that I thought I knew, playing it with just the piano all of a sudden throws up different challenges, and it's really nice actually exploring that with Andrew, and it just gives it a whole new lease of life, I think.
Well, Jason Yard, thank you so much for joining us and speaking to us.
Great to speak to you.
And I look forward to catching up with you soon. This is Dark to Bright. Thank you. Saxophonist Jason Yard with pianist Andrew McCormack and the catchy Dark to Bright from their latest album Places and Other Spaces. It's an album of two sensitive and intelligent artists in conversation musically and certainly stimulating and musical. A note for all Kenton fans. Jazz Lineup present the Augmented BBC Big Band, conducted by Jigs Wigham, a former Kenton band member, on Tuesday the 18th of October at the Royal Northern College of Music, Manchester, to perform Kenton's band version of West Side Story, arranged by Johnny Richards. We'll also be celebrating the centenary of this unique band leader with arrangements by Bill Holman and Bill Russo. The band will be augmented by French horns and will be set out in the classic Kenton V format, with the rhythm section forming the spine of the band down the middle, and I'll be there to present the concert. That's on Tuesday the 18th of October, that's next Tuesday, at the Royal Northern College of Music, Manchester, for the BBC Big Band conducted by Jigs Wigham, celebrating Stan Kenton with material that includes the band's arrangement of West Side Story. British guitarist Phil Robson always produces music of the highest quality, and his latest release is no exception, not least for the fact that as a special guest, he's invited the original and gifted American tenor saxophone star Mark Turner. The album was the result of concerts at the Vortex in London and the Hoare Theatre in Crawley earlier this year, where Robson was able to invite Turner for the concerts to then be recorded. Gareth Lucrane is on flute, Michael Janish is on bass, and Ernesto Simpson is on drums. This is Telegram. Thank you. Phil Robson and his clever and soulful use of the bolero for Telegram, featuring Gareth Locrane on flute, special guest Mark Turner on saxophones, Michael Janish on bass, and the incredibly gifted drummer Ernesto Simpson. The album, although recorded live, retains the live energy while sounding as though studio recorded, and all the way through delivers at a very high level of music making. The album is called The Immeasurable Code and is out on the Whirlwind label. That's it for this week. Join me next week from the BBC Maida Vale studios for an exclusive concert from Stan Saltzman recorded for this programme. And Monday night, Jazz on 3 features Wayne Shorter in concert at the Barbican, London. Till next week from me, Julian Joseph. Bye-bye.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Through the Night on BBC Radio 3. I'm John Shea, and in the next couple of hours, among other things, you can hear a dramatic Handel cantata and the Symphony No. 6 by Schubert. To Switzerland, first of all, for a chamber concert which pairs Brahms' horn trio together with a Mendelssohn violin sonata. All three that Mendelssohn composed are in the key of F. The F minor, Opus 4, was the only one of them to be published in his lifetime. The 16-year-old was still writing under the influence of Mozart and Beethoven, but that didn't prevent such original strokes as the solo violin recitative that begins the sonata. Isabella Faust and Alexander Melnikov are the players.